What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.
All medications require eligibility and prescription. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
Is she Madam Secretary Clinton?
You mean like on Twitter?
I mean, you know, what is her title?
Oh, when we call her?
What was her title when she was running for office?
Right, Madam Secretary, I guess that is it. Doesn't that sound really weird?
Yeah. Well, you got to know if it's a boy secretary or a girl secretary.
It's true.
Because Stalin was a boy secretary, so he didn't get madam. He got secretary bro, Stalin.
Was he really secretary?
I mean, you're the communist. Yeah, he was the secretary of the Politburo.
Oh my gosh.
He was a pencil-pushing bureaucrat.
He was an administrator.
Yeah.
He was the administrative assistant.
He worked at the bursar's office of the Communist Party. These are the things that we should record, but...
Well, I am recording.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
You're ready.
I'm ready. I'm ready for Hillary. Welcome to the Katie Halper Show. Don't forget to come to our live taping Monday, September 18th at the Brooklyn Commons at 388 Atlantic Avenue at 7 p.m. We'll be following our live taping with karaoke. Our guest will be Jabari Brisport, who's running for city council in Brooklyn's 35th district, and Khader El-Yatim, who ran for city council in Brooklyn's 43rd district. And he didn't win the primary, but he came really close to beating the Democratic machine. He is a Palestinian-born Lutheran pastor, Arab-American socialist. What's not to love? 7 p.m. at Brooklyn Commons at 388 Atlantic Avenue, September 18th. Welcome to the Katie Halper Show. I'm your host, Katie Halper, and I'm always joined by...
Gabe Pacheco.
I myself identify as the feminist Bernie bro and Gabe Pacheco.
I'm predominantly a dude bro, I think, on the spectrum of bros. Probably a Chicano dude bro. I don't know what the new term is that we've chosen to adopt, but Latinx seems to be the most cutting edge way to put it.
So you're Latinx bro, Latinx dude bro.
Yes.
Such a great show for you guys today. We're talking about what happened, Hillary Clinton's new book. And our guests are Thomas Frank, the author of Listen Liberal, or Whatever Happened to the Party of the People. He has a review up of what happened at The Guardian called Hillary Clinton's Book Has a Clear Message, Don't Blame Me. Then we talked to Nomiki Konst, an investigative reporter at the Young Turks and a Sanders appointee to the Democratic Unity Reform Commission. So there are two things happening this week that we're really excited about. One, Bernie Sanders is introducing Medicare for All, which means that we are one step closer to updating the United States. So it's caught up with every other industrialized nation in the world.
You're talking
and
like Sweden.
I'm talking Holland.
You're talking Holland. France.
I'm talking United Kingdom.
Okay.
I'm talking Germany. I'm talking everywhere, basically, right? Where to one extent or another, people are guaranteed health care, right? And this is where people always say, oh, but you have to wait on lines, they're rations. And you know what? You know what we're going to do, Gabe? We're going to send them to an expert. This should be a segment. Send them to an expert.
Yeah, can't
go talk to Adam Gaffney.
That's the man, Adam Gaffney. If you want to hear about healthcare and how it should be universal, Adam Gaffney is the voice of reason.
Two very exciting things. We got Medicare for All, right? And this is kind of a great metaphor. We got Bernie Sanders introducing Medicare for All. But what does Hillary Clinton do?
She
has her own contribution to make.
What is she bringing to the table? If this is Stone Soup, where the village and every different member of the village is bringing an ingredient to help make a delicious soup for all of the United States to consume.
Yes.
What
soup
is,
for all?
Yeah. What For the socialized soup kitchen that we're going to have.
That's amazing. Socialized soup for the soul? For the atheist soul? I don't know. Yeah. For the soup lines? Yeah.
For the secular soul.
For the secular soul, yeah.
So what is she bringing to the table?
Hillary is bringing entertainment in the form of a book. That's what she's bringing. So we got, if you want to be healthy and live, Bernie Sanders is your man. If you want to read self-congratulating quasi-fiction, Hillary Clinton's your woman. Of course, that Hillary just came out with her book, and it's called What Happened, which is also a great throwback to a great line in the Christopher Guest film, A Mighty Wind.
Hey, what happened? As you know, back in 1970, I started on a series called What Happened? And every time something would go wrong, I would look at the camera and say, hey, what happened? We had a lot of fun with that and a lot of other catchphrases. I got a real red wagon. And I can't do my work. And I believe I was the first one to use the phrase, I don't think so. But it only lasted a year. And that's good because that's how you establish a cult.
Like Bernie's doing right now. His message was for the entire United States of America. And she really couched her message as being for true believers in the Democratic Party.
Right. Yeah. So it's like, I'm with her was the perfect slogan, right? Because it didn't really reach out to people who weren't already there.
That's right.
I thought it would be cool to just go through some of the best things that she said in her book. So one of the first things that was leaked, actually, about the book was a passage that I thought was really interesting. I don't know if you saw it. Let me just read it. Okay, ready? Jake Sullivan, my top policy advisor, told me it reminded him of a scene from the 1998 movie There's Something About Mary. A deranged hitchhiker says he's come up with a brilliant plan. Instead of the famous 8-minute abs exercise routine, he's going to market 7-minute abs. It's the same, just quicker.
You heard of this thing, the 8-minute abs?
Yeah, sure, 8-minute abs. Yeah, the exercise video. Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, this is going to blow that right out of the water. Listen to this. 7-minute abs.
Right. Yes. Okay. All right. I see where you're going.
Then the driver, played by Ben Stiller, says, well, why not 6-minute abs?
Right. That's good. That's good. Unless, of course, somebody comes up with 6-minute abs, then you're in trouble, huh?
That's what it was like in policy debates with Bernie. We would propose a bold infrastructure investment plan or an ambitious new apprenticeship program for young people. And then Bernie would announce basically the same thing, but bigger. On issue after issue, it was like he kept proposing 4-minute abs or no minute abs, magic abs. Okay, I'm overdoing her Midwestern accent, but whatever. Someone sent me a Facebook post that summed up the dynamic in which we were caught. And here's the Facebook meme thing, right? Whatever, right? Bernie, I think America should get a pony. Hillary, how will you pay for the pony? Where will the pony come from? How will you get Congress to agree to the pony? Bernie, Hillary thinks America doesn't deserve a pony. Hillary, actually, I love ponies. Bernie supporters. She changed the position on ponies. Hashtag witch Hillary. Witch Hillary, you know, spelled W-H-I-C-H and W-I-T-C-H.
Thank you for having me here on the stage tonight with Madam Secretary Clinton. And she is offering to expand healthcare with more options with the with industries. And what I'm offering, though, is ponies. I'm offering ponies to all of my Bernie bros who love ponies, all my bronies out there.
And by the way, did you see my pony video? Because she did inspire me to make a pony video. The great song by Ginuwine. But I do really like that song, by the way. You know that song?
Oh, it's great.
It's a great song.
Ginuwine just walks into a bar and it's filled with a bunch of white old cowboys.
Country western dude. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
I think he broke the color line there.
I've never seen a video that progressive.
Me neither. And I kind of wanted to put Bernie's face on his body, but then that would have been like white face or like black body, and we don't do
black
that.
Black body, Jew face, you can't do that.
Oh my God. Black body, Jew face, you can't go wrong. I like that.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Wait, what is it called? Clear art. What is it? Clear eyes. Clear eyes, open heart. Can't lose. Jew-faced black bodies. Can't lose. All right. Like, I still can't get over that she's comparing him to a serial killer character. It could be worse, though, because Ben Stiller's the Jew, and she doesn't compare him to the Jew character. What do you think, though, about her comparing Bernie Sanders to a deranged hitchhiker character in a Farrelly Brothers movie?
Dude, if there is a character out of a horror movie in this, it is her. Because, honestly, and I'm not saying that Hillary is a monster. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is that today I felt like I was getting a trailer for The Reanimator Part 3 or Part 4. Because why is she coming back? Why is she coming out of this political grave that she's in? She didn't speak up during the Women's March.
She didn't even show up to it, yeah.
She didn't show up during that. She has been quiet. She's been in the woods. And instead of coming forward and pushing for progressive policies, like Bernie's doing right now, she's coming out of hiding to sell a book.
Right.
And I don't know. I mean, I look, it could be fake news. It could be real news. But are there $2,000 tickets to come see Hillary at book signings? Is that what's happening?
I mean, maybe there are. And if there are, we should find out. And I wonder where that money is going to. But you know what, Gabe? I think it's really interesting that people, you know, we make fun of ourselves sometimes as not being like, you know, 100% reporting and being a lot of kibitzing kind of.
I don't report anything.
Yeah, in fact, you own that so hard, it's almost become a nervous tick. It's almost Tourette's-like because you literally say, if people want to know that, they should go to Wikipedia. Wikipedia would be a great place to check out, blah, blah, blah. And if you want to learn more about that, go to Wikipedia. I could just do a whole mashup montage of you declaim, like kind of owning not knowing stuff.
But, I mean, my opinions just come from listening to Delete Your Account podcast, Chapo Trap House. Sometimes Street Fight. Sometimes people share New York Times articles on my Facebook page, and I'll click on them every 10th time because I only get like 9 articles for free. Before I have to get my own subscription. And I wish the Washington Post gave some more free articles.
Yeah, they're stingy.
Facebook is where I get my news. And here's the thing about Facebook. Hillary has complained about Russia. Democrats have complained about Russia, collusion. I get it. But Mark Zuckerberg sold Russia all sorts of ad time and gave them free reign to spread disinformation on Facebook. So if anybody should be charged with the Alien Sedition Act, it should be Mark Zuckerberg.
Yes, I like it. You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. You know what's really funny, Gabe? People are just learning this, right? Even though, like I was saying, we mock ourselves for not being authorities. We are authorities. Because you know what we know about that the media didn't know about until like yesterday? That Hillary said she wanted to send back children who were here who had crossed the border, who had come theoretically illegally.
What about right now, as we're seeing these thousands of children come across, shunted off into makeshift shelters?
It's horrible.
Hard choice. Let them stay in the United States or send them back?
Well, two quick points. One, the numbers are increasing dramatically. And the main reason I believe why that's happening is that the violence in certain of those Central American countries is increasing dramatically. And there is not sufficient law enforcement or will on the part of the governments of those countries to try to deal with this exponential increase in violence, drug trafficking, the drug cartels, and many children are fleeing from that violence.
Should they be able to stay here? It's safer.
It may be safer, but that's not the answer. I do not.
So should they be sent back?
First of all, we have to provide the best emergency care we can provide. We have children 5 and 6 years old who have come up from Central America. We need to do more to provide border security in southern Mexico.
They should be sent back now.
Well, they should be sent back as soon as it can be determined who responsible adults and their families are, because there are concerns about whether all of them can be sent back. But I think all of them who can be should be reunited with their families. And just as Vice President Biden is arguing today in Central America, we've got to do more. I started this when I was secretary, to deal with the violence in this region, to deal with border security. But we have to send a clear message. Just because your child gets across the border, that doesn't mean the child gets to stay. So we don't want to send a message that is contrary to our laws or will encourage more children to make that dangerous journey.
100%. those six-year-old children had free will. They had complete and total accountability for all of their actions, and they're not playing by the game that they were
by the
born.
Rules.
There are rules to the game, and those rules to the game are part of a social contract that everyone has implicitly signed around the world.
Yes, they know. They've read Rousseau or John Locke. They've read all of it.
Every one of these children knew the rules, and they knew the stakes that they were playing
by. When they chose to be born in Guatemala.
That's right. That's right. So, so you know what? You guys get ready to get sent back because you broke the rules.
Right.
And
because
every
she had to send them a message. She literally said that, right? She wanted to send them a message. Somehow, nobody knew that.
You know what?
Except for the left. Yeah.
Sometimes you learn a lesson. If you get caught smoking a cigarette, you're 7. You're 8 years old. You know what? A good, responsible father or mother, they throw you into a closet and make you smoke a whole pack of unfiltered cigarettes
right.
to learn
Tough
your
luck.
Lesson.
Right.
Exactly. So you cross the border in a papoose or in a stroller.
Right.
Or maybe you're smuggled in luggage.
Right. Or you go on your own. These are the ones who go on their own. They're the real go-getters.
Okay. So you show the initiative to walk across a 1,000-mile desert border.
Right. And you're
by
punished.
Yourself. You better believe it.
You better believe it.
You break the rules. And
you brought this on yourself.
Yeah, you get a one-way ticket back, Buster Brown, and that's it. And I hope you learned your lesson.
Yeah, back to the frying pan, back to the Central American violence that I helped create.
The femicide.
Don't forget the word femicide. I know, femicide capital. Hillary Clinton, shout out to Hillary Clinton for enabling the coup government in Honduras, refusing to do anything seriously to challenge it, urging other countries to recognize its legitimacy and then lying about it. Shout out. RIP, rest in power, Berta Cáceres, an labor, indigenous rights, and environmental organizer who literally predicted and outlined how destructive Hillary Clinton was for Honduras and then was killed under the government that Hillary helped bring in. Now, another thing that Hillary does is she blames basically everyone but herself, right? In fact, we should do a cover of that song. Blame it on the meh. Blame it on the nah-nah. Blame it on the meh.
Well, okay. So, I mean, I had the wind taken out of my sails for the first time during Bush Gore. Mm. And we saw that Gore won the popular vote. And the Electoral College gave it to Bush.
Mm-hmm.
So, right there, you know, the Democrats saw that happen. And they didn't fight to have that rectified.
Right.
And then what are we, 15, 16 years later?
Right.
Even later than that.
Whatever. Whatever.
Why don't you Wikipedia?
Go to Wikipedia. Exactly, yeah.
We're decades past that, and still the Democrats have not decided to change the system by which we choose our leaders.
Right. Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
She won. She won the popular vote,
right.
So nobody stole it from her other than the broken system.
The Electoral College, right.
And she could be an advocate for that.
Yes.
Moving forward.
Right. And also, you know, she could have gone to Wisconsin. I'm just going to put it out there. But right. She also said another point. She said, I'm proud to be a Democrat and I wish Bernie were too. Then she called Bernie Sanders' policy proposals little more than a pipe dream. Jeff Stein at Vox pointed this out before, but, you know, Hillary Clinton is saying both that Bernie Sanders just copied her ideas and made them slightly bolder and
copy
that they were
paste.
The same.
Copy paste,
right?
With a little
copy
bit paste. More seasoning.
With seasoning, yes. Copy paste paprika. But she's also saying that he had totally unrealistic proposals. So which is it?
Right.
They can't both be true.
Yeah, what do you think?
I think the truth is she knows, and every one of her defenders knows, that she was indeed less progressive than he is. And I think it's an embarrassing rewriting of history to pretend that they were equally progressive.
So let's get back to the idea of the Democratic Party. And I was raised in a house that was all Democrats, and I love having grown up in that. But honestly, I think of myself as an American citizen before I think of myself as allied to a party for life.
Mm.
And over time, we've seen the Democrats lose certain demographics. Who cares what the party is? What's
right.
more important are the policies. And
right.
I could care less that Bernie wasn't a lifelong Democrat.
I know. And it's such a weird thing that they think that that's an insult, right?
It's it's a weird badge of honor to also then say that you're loyal to a party over all of the United States and all of the American people.
Right, especially because that's one of the main things people hate is like partisanship and party loyalty.
Yeah, so she is one aspect of like our polarized political system right
exactly.
now.
Exactly, right.
And simply by staking that claim and being like Democrats over everything is right. That is the problem.
Well, let me also remind you, I'm a hack loyal to a party, and I put party affiliation over policy. Okay, yes, next. Right? What else?
Yeah.
I mean, what else can we...
Also, this other guy is not a hack.
Yes! You know what it's time to do now? It's time to talk to Thomas Frank. And who is Thomas Frank? Well, Thomas Frank is the author of Listen Liberal, or Whatever Happened to the Party of the People. He has a review up of what happened at The Guardian called Hillary Clinton's Book Has a Clear Message, Don't Blame Me.
My original idea was to compare Hillary Clinton's book and William Jennings Bryan's book after losing in 1896.
What's it called? The First Battle?
First Battle, because he ran three times. You know, it was a crusade. He was also very young. He was 39. Yeah.
Spring chicken.
The first time around. And so Bryan's book is filled with this kind of, there's no narrative to it. It's just all these campaign speeches thrown together between covers. And, some of them are hilarious. The way people used to talk, political speech back then was just so, this incredible rodomontade, right? They were just like, blah, 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 blah. These really, really, really roundabout way of saying things. And everything was always superlative. Everything was always on the line for all times. You know, the greatest comparisons there. And what fascinated me about it, though, was that Bryan really had a cause with a capital C. Free silver.
And Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, and right? But also, I mean, there's some great quotes in this.
Oh my God, are we going to spend this interview with you reading me William Jennings Bryan's
yes.
quotes instead of Hillary's?
Here's what this is one of his speeches from the year before, I don't know, 1893 or something. Well, has it been said by the senator from Missouri that we have come to the parting of the ways? Today, the Democratic Party stands, but you're going to like this, actually.
I'm listening.
Today, the Democratic Party stands between two great forces, each inviting its support. On the one side stand the corporate interests of the nation, its moneyed institutions, its aggregations of wealth and capital, imperious, arrogant, compassionless. They demand special legislation, favors, privileges, and immunities. They can subscribe magnificently to campaign funds. They can strike down opposition with their all-pervading influence. And to those who fawn and flatter, they bring ease and plenty. They demand that the Democratic Party shall become their agent to execute their merciless decrees. On the other side, Katie.
Mm-hmm, Thomas.
Unnumbered throng which gave a name to the Democratic Party and for which it has assumed to speak. Work-worn and dust-begrimed, they make their sad appeal. They hear of average wealth increased on every side and feel the inequality of its distribution. They see an overproduction of everything desired because of the underproduction of the ability to buy. They cannot pay for loyalty except with their suffrages and can only punish betrayal with their condemnation. Although the ones who most deserve the fostering care of government, their cries for help too often beat in vain against the outer wall, while others less deserving find ready access to legislative halls. Good
which,
stuff.
Which one was that? Was that Hillary or the other guy? That would be a great thing. Who said it? Hillary or
Bryan?
Bryan.
No,
yeah.
That would be Bryan. Yeah. That would be
an amazing game.
The reason it intrigued me, and I, of course, you know, I only had 800 words, so I couldn't go into something like that. But the reason it intrigued me is because with Bryan, the cause was holy. The cause was holy. And with Hillary, the cause is secondary. Mm. The book starts with her saying, you know, I wanted to run for president because I thought I'd be good at it. And then coming up with issues.
Right. It's like backwards, right?
You know, Yeah, that's literally how her book. Actually, that's not how her book starts. That's how the narrative of the book starts. It first begins with how she felt after the defeat and the sort of regimen that she went through to get herself back up and, you know, feeling good about life again. And
radical self-care.
Imagine what she must feel like in her heart of hearts. She knows that she is ultimately responsible for not defeating Donald Trump when she had every advantage in the world. You know, she has a party that the rank and file is so much bigger than his. Every pollster said that she was in the lead. She outraised him and outspent him 2-1. She's got Barack Obama behind her. Trump is hated by his own party. You know, I was at a convention. They didn't even like no other high ranking Republican would show up at his convention. I mean, Mitch McConnell was there and Paul Ryan, but George Bush wasn't there. Neither of the Bushes, you know, no representatives of the Reagan family, you know.
Right.
Mitt Romney wasn't there. John McCain wasn't there. The only one who showed up was Bob Dole.
Who knows if he knew it, that he was there. He's not that with it.
I like Bob Dole. He's a loyal, you know, he's from Kansas. This is a guy who doesn't even really believe in the Republican, like in the politics of the Republican Party, but he believes in the party. He's very old fashioned.
Right. Sounds like a good marriage material. He's thick and thin.
Anyhow, she had every advantage in the world and succeed and managed to lose. And that's extraordinary.
But do you think she actually, I mean, obviously on some level she knows this. Because I feel like Bill Clinton totally knows it. He's angry because he was the one who allegedly, he threw his cell phone off of the balcony of his Little Rock mansion because Hillary's campaign wasn't listening to him and wasn't heeding his warnings that they were neglecting the white working class, at least in their campaigning.
Fair enough. But, you know, I think Hillary Clinton is a smart person and probably a decent person at the end of the day. One of the biggest problems that Hillary has, if you ask me, she is absolutely, how would you put it, hamstrung by her reverence for Bill Clinton and for what he did in the 90s. And she basically, like, he is the greatest president, and, you know, or more or less. And she, you know, she talks about all the wonderful achievements of his administration, which obviously she had a hand in. And for her to win the white working class would have required a number of you know, she would have had to break with his legacy in all sorts of ways.
Like when Obama says he could have won a third term, I think he's right, but I don't even think it has to do with policies as much as it has to do with that he's how good he is as a campaigner and how he convinces people that he feels their pain.
Oh yeah, people love that. People love that man, Barack Obama. Oh yes, very so.
I get this sense, I have this image in my head, but of Hillary and Bill. Bill very angry at Hillary for not doing what he told her to do vis-a-vis the white working class. And Hillary just saying, like, no, I'm a victim, and it was the basket of deplorables and the misogyny and racism.
Well, look, so in this book, you and I have talked about this. Hillary's supporters, her most sort of committed supporters, will basically say and do anything to deny the sort of narrative about the white working class. Hillary doesn't do that. She acknowledges it. Now, you have to wade through a lot of crap to get there. The book is it's all the usual suspects. The Russians, it's James Comey. The other party that she blames, and this was a little bit of a surprise to me, was the media. And the grounds on which she blames them, because you and I look at the media and it's like, wow, these people love Hillary Clinton.
Exactly.
But she blames them because they covered the email scandal as though it was legitimate.
Right.
It's like, well, you know, it was a real story. That was a news story. That's not media bias. That was a real news story.
They're so entitled.
She thinks that was totally unfair of them to do. It's funny that you know, that Hillary goes after the media so hard because she blames the media, but her blame all rests on like certain studies that she's seen that say, like, you know, the media spent so much time on the emails, you know.
Right.
There's no actual, it's like there's no actual substance to it. Nothing you can sink your teeth into. Like, she doesn't give you anything where you can say, geez, yeah, that's really unfair.
Right, no like controlled experiment, right? With like other people's email scandals.
And it's not even that unfair. It's like the guy was asking her about her emails and she was like.
Right. How dare you? How dare you? You're putting me on the spot.
And that was it. I think that's it. I think that's her only example. But she has dozens of examples of the media agreeing with her. Right. Dozens. But then she's like, and they were so unfair.
Right. She uses them to back her up that she's right. But then, yeah.
Well, she's right about Comey. I mean, Comey did. That really hurt.
Why did he do that, Comey? I don't understand it.
No, I mean, it's, I don't know. But she doesn't take any revenge against Huma. And it was technically Huma's fault.
Oh my God, poor Huma.
Anthony Weiner's fault.
Oh my God, Weiner. Is that you trying to be nice? Refusing to go low when they go low, you go high? Not saying Weiner?
Oh, I thought that was his name.
No, it's Weiner.
Oh, it's W-I-E-N?
I'm not even, like, it's definitely pronounced Weiner.
I thought it was, now what do I know? And so those are her big three villains, the Russians, James Comey, the media. Now, she goes after Bernie Sanders, but she doesn't really blame him for costing her the election. But she does. She has more than one chapter attacking him, criticizing him. And I thought this was really the low point of the book because it's so ungracious. You know, here's a guy, this guy campaigned for her.
Worked his butt off. Yeah.
Yes, and he cast the deciding, you know, they had that whole rigmarole at the convention where he cast the votes that put her over the top and, you know, all that stuff. He didn't do the Ralph Nader. He played, you know.
At all, right.
No, he played the game, you know. And for her to do that, I thought was churlish. For her to go after him again and again and again. And also the grounds on which she goes after him are so ridiculous. Like that he was aping her, you know, that he was mimicking her issues. No, it wasn't at all. And she as good as admits that it wasn't. And then the other thing is the idea that he is this kind of silly idealist. The same thing that the Washington Post was saying, by the way, that he's a silly idealist and she is very realistic. But she's not realistic. There's all sorts of ways where she's just in a fantasy world, like her understanding of history is just complete fantasy, you know, where Bill Clinton is this great guy who did all these wonderful things and she can't acknowledge what NAFTA did. She can't. She, you know, she brushes off what the welfare reform did. She does acknowledge it. She talks about it. Remember, it used to be the Clintons' proudest moment, welfare reform. And now it's this terrible, they're embarrassed by it, you know. But she does talk about it, but she tries to wiggle out of it.
Well, it also makes no sense, right? Because the following two things cannot both be true at the same time. You can't say that Bernie Sanders is a pipe dream, delusional radical, and that he just copied your ideas. If you're the realist pragmatist, the guy copying you can't be the delusional dealing in the fantasy world. It's one or the other. Yeah. Thank you, Hillary, because now I get to relitigate the primary and people can no longer tell me to stop relitigating it because that's what they're doing. If they like Hillary Clinton, that's what she's doing.
Why would she make fun of Bernie like that? I mean, what is the point of that? The man did all this stuff.
He's now doing single payer. He's pushing for all these great things. And if she comes out against him, what is she coming out as?
I know. It only reflects poorly on her. It you know, it's to keep that going and to keep trying to, you know, push it to crack him down or break him down or smack him down or whatever you want to call it.
I don't know which is worse. When she pretends that they are the same thing, like she does when she says that he aped her policies or whatever, or when she vilifies him. And she kind of manages to do both at the same time, which makes no sense. Like you can't, if you're trying to get his popularity to rub off on you and present yourself as kind of the trailblazer in all the things that he's clearly was the trailblazer in, but let's pretend you are, then you don't bash him, right? Like it's kind of self-destructive what she's doing.
No, it doesn't make any sense. Yeah. The only context in which it makes sense is that she's trying to set up for the war within the Democratic Party.
Right. And that was Thomas Frank, author of What's the Matter with Kansas? And more recently, Listen Liberal. He has a review up of what happened at The Guardian called Hillary Clinton's Book Has a Clear Message, Don't Blame Me. And to hear the rest of our interview with Thomas Frank, please join our Patreon at patreon.com/TheKatieHalperShow. Again, that's patreon.com/TheKatieHalperShow. We talk a lot more about what happened, plus Thomas reads some great lines from the book that will probably make you laugh and cry. And Thomas Frank just mentioned the war in the Democratic Party. Now, do we have the perfect guest to bring on next? Noam Mickey Konst is a Sanders appointee to the Democratic Unity Reform Commission. She's also an investigative reporter at the Young Turks. Noam Nomiki, she's Greek, by the way. So she and Gabe have that in common, yeah.
There's a whole thing
there. Maybe related. We're going to do a DNA test.
Greeks love democracy.
Oh, yeah, they do.
They founded it.
They founded it. We're talking to Nomiki Cons. She, by the way, was smeared a couple weeks ago for being a straight white man because she had the nerve to criticize some policy and record-based stuff, not personal tax, about Kamala Harris. No racist stuff, no sexist stuff, but she did have some concerns about Kamala Harris's accepting of funds from Stephen Manchin. So Nomiki is one of the women who really bears the brunt of attacks from not only the right, which we really expect, but from people who call themselves liberals, call themselves the left, and actually engage in the very misogyny, racism, erasure, and invisibilizing all these terms that they like to use as they pretend to be allies and woke. And they do those exact same things to women and people of color, ranging from Nomi to Nina Turner, because the question is not whether or not they are committed to anti-racism or feminism or social justice or equality. The question is whether or not the person is politically useful or politically threatening. And if they are politically useful and ideological allies, then of course people ranging from Neera Tanden to any other Hillary Clinton partisan praise them, emphasize the importance of their gender and their race and how much diversity they bring. And of course, if they don't like them because they have politics that are to the left of Attila the Hun, then all of a sudden we are just, we're either just horrible people or, you know, we get things like being, you know, being called a cam girl. I got called a Russian prostitute the other day. You get any good ones?
I mean, I get them all the time. Yeah. I think my favorite are the ones that come, you know, you're always going to have trolls online. My favorite are the ones who come from people who have MSNBC shows like Joy Reid,
right,
who are managing $60 million think tank budgets like Neera Tanden, because I think that they have a responsibility and a duty to be more professional. And the funny thing is that, you know, I don't manage a $60 million budget and I don't have an MSNBC show, but I do have a responsibility as somebody with a megaphone, albeit a much smaller megaphone, to criticize and to question based on policy. And when you're not questioning and you're not arguing on policy, you know, and you're getting, you're calling names and you're throwing out red herrings, you know, anybody who's taken a Logic 101 class in college knows that means your argument's weak. And so I think a lot of this right now is the effect of them losing control and knowing that they don't have a lot. Like, I saw this little article, you may have seen it, someone tweeted it to me, and I started cracking up, and it was like the 100 yeah. most influential people on Twitter, and every single one of them was like from very well-known people, famous people, like, who, okay, I get it. Like, Neera Tanden is one of those people. I get it. Marcos Melitzis, you know, started the Daily Kos. I don't agree with him, you know. But he has, like, influence.
Sure.
But some of these folks, I mean, they're all Uber Hillary tweeters. But what people don't understand is that during the campaign, and this is what I like to pull back the curtain on, which is, I think, what gets them really angry. During the campaign, there were mechanisms in place. They had literally super PACs. And you know, I don't remember the whole million dollar troll thing. I uncovered that, and I tipped that off, some pulling back the curtain myself. I found that because I was part of I was still on Hillary's Ready for Hillary Super PAC list, email list.
Oh, I didn't know this. So, yes, let's step back and tell us this. Yeah.
Yeah, so they sent out this email saying, we're investing $1 million in conquering the Bernie left. So I screenshot it, and I sent it to three reporters, and they were like, are you kidding me? And so they published it.
Are you kidding me?
And that's how that whole story.
Wait, are you talking about Correct the Record? Or something
else.
No,
it wasn't Correct the Record at the time. It was Ready for Hillary. But Correct the Record was affiliated with it. And so that's when the Media Matters, the head of Media Matters at that time, who still tweets me online, got very angry at me. And we went on a CNN segment, and I called out his finances.
Brad Woodhouse, Nomiki Const.
Brad, you're part of Correct the Record. Correct the Record receives money from a super PAC. Correct the Record then gives money to the DNC. The DNC then gives money to the general fund. We know how this works. It's called a flow of money.
We're trying to win an election, Nomiki. We're trying to beat the Republicans.
And it's not the cool kids table. This is a competitive primary. This is a competitive primary. Hang on a second, Brad. When you start acting like the Democratic Party establishment is the cool kids table, and you ignore the fact
fact that 80% of the Democrats who've been voting in this election under the age of 50 are supporting the Bernie Sanders movement. Democrats need to bring them in. But the party is playing politics right now is dirty. It might be legal, but it is dirty.
You know, this is, it's so funny because now it's all exposed. But in the heat of the primary, no one was talking about, hey, like, I you know, it's really hard to take you seriously when you're funneling money from Ready for Hillary, which should be closed, to Correct the Record, shares an office with Media Matters, which is funneling money into the DNC. You know, I really wanted to address the issue at the heart of the issue here, which is this is all a mechanism of design. So these people were, many of them are being organized in, they're on listservs still from the campaign. They're on Reddit pages. We noticed in the last 2 to 3 months since the super PAC started again, there was a pattern. So like, if I say something, I remember it was during the Unity Reform Commission, I said something about primaries, which, by the way, people on the commission didn't find controversial at all. I said it, someone tweeted it out who was watching the commission, and then it arrived on a Reddit page, and I started getting slammed as a racist, and that's when Joy Reid started to go after me again. And so it's like, you say something, and when Nina says something, Tulsi said something.
Nina Turner, Tulsi Gabbard, just clarifying.
Right. And so they'll flash a flag, and it's like all of them start repeating the same message. And so I was literally getting hundreds of the same exact tweets. So that's when you like saying to yourself, okay, like you guys are organized. They're using a strategy that has been repeated over and over and over again. And like,
which is if you repeat something over and over and over again, it's true,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And I mean, in messaging, from my perspective, when I used to do messaging training for folks, I would always say, the greatest way to break through that kind of strategy is don't give people attention where they don't need it if they're not powerful, right? Number one. But also, if they are of power, you want to call them out on their strategies because it disarms them. They have no idea what to do. Oh, you just called. And then they'll distract and they'll say, you're not being very unifying. And it's like, I'm sorry, you just called me alt-left. But then you get into this bickering war. And so it's hard when you get into the bickering war. And so when you focus on issues, you know, I try to kind of jump back and forth. I hate to give away my own strategy, but I think it's important for all of us to jump back and forth and understand when to fight back, when to pick a battle. Is it significant enough? Or is it just going to add more fire? Hi, you're calling the other side alt-left.
Right.
So this is why, as long as they're funded, you have to attack their funding source. You know, most of their donors are you know, I think they're well-intentioned and they believed in Hillary for different reasons. But a lot of them are disconnected. They're not on Twitter. They're not noticing the nuances of the fight. And so unless we are able to get this conversation on TV or in mainstream press, they're going to continue to be funded.
Well, I'm specifically talking about donors. You know, I used to do fundraising and I know how you talk to these people. They're not, some might be more engaged, but let's just be real. The Bernie people, whether you're a 50-year-old or a 20-year-old, are far more active. It is why you could have 50,000 followers, 100,000 followers that are so active compared to Joy Reid's 2 million, where maybe like 10% are active.
Active, you mean online or active in the real world?
No, I mean, and in the real world. Our folks, the progressives, are a more activated base. Working people, whether you're white or black, did not turn out for Hillary Clinton. And so you want to win back working people of all demographics, you got to talk about the economy. And so when she, you know, her supporters are not, unless they're like the Kool-Aid drinking sycophants who, frankly, I think a lot are on payroll still, and their identities, literally their identities were attached to Hillary Clinton. You know, they, you know, it's mind blowing to me that, like, I mean, Peter Dow, oh my God.
Peter Dow is one of the founders of Hillary Men, who's,
and obsessed. Cher Blue,
yeah. So a propagandist, part of the David Brock PR smear empire.
I'm sorry, can we just start saying these things?
Yes.
And all these, I think the ones that, you know, I'm particularly concerned with, you know, the other ones I think that are pay-to-play, I mean, they're all pay-to-play, but it's like, they're minimal pay-to-play. Like, these are folks who, you know, they can reverse their positions overnight for Twitter fame or whatever promise they think they're getting out of this. There's been a few people who have been offered jobs after the Hillary campaign who've said, no, I'm not going to name names, to stay involved in the movement. And it's quite
What do you mean the movement? Sorry.
The Bernie movement. So there's a lot of folks who they want to bring to their side, right. So they can say, and they were doing this during the campaign as well. So they can say, like, you know, number one, control them, and control the narrative coming out of their mouth, and also use their reputations and their, like, Bernie,
right,
names to like say that we're unifying or whatever. It doesn't work, and it hasn't worked, and none of this stuff has worked. I do think there's the economic part of this is really important.
So important. Yeah.
History repeats itself. You know, what we're seeing here is when you have massive income inequality, as we have right now, the worst it's been since the Great Depression, since the economy collapsed in the late 20s. And that's, you know, one of the reasons why we had Brexit, and this has been duplicated. And anytime we have massive income inequality like this, which has really only happened a couple of times, but like to this level, you see a rise of fascism. And fascist strategies, because what they do is they try to tap into a base of folks that are hurting economically, and usually they're less educated, and they tap into those people, and it's because of economic insecurity, right?
Discontent, right? And upheaval, right. A sense of upheaval.
Absolutely. And you see the same with the left. So it's populism. When you have vast income inequality, you have pseudo-populism, you see fascism,
yes.
That is guising itself as populism, but that's, you know, everybody kind of knows what's going on now. And then you have actual populism, economic populism, progressive populism. And like, you know, it wasn't called neoliberalism in 1928 and 27, but there were robber barons and, you know, we've been here before. And
those are the pseudo ones you're talking about.
Yes.
The neoliberals, the robber barons, right.
Right. So, and the people who support them, the baking industry. And so you see, this when the rich are getting disproportionately rich and the middle class is shrinking and poverty is soaring, and in our situation you have a generation that is incredibly in debt and doesn't have options, and so they feel activated, but they're also the most educated generation. The education now is, you know, this generation, this millennial generation, is the largest generation in history, and they're the most educated generation in history. And not to mention you have technology. So things are moving at a faster pace. People are getting called out faster. People feel empowered. So Bernie Sanders can become the most popular politician. Henry Wallace was the Bernie Sanders of FDR's years. Henry Wallace was his vice president, and then he ousted Henry Wallace because Henry Wallace was more popular. And back then, the Democratic Party was controlled, you know, in backroom deals. Now it still is, but there's this illusion of democracy, which is, you know, we all know the real deal now. So, you know, during the campaign, during Hillary's campaign, if anybody read Shattered, that book about the campaign, there was this mention, and it was kind of in a comical way, that Hillary's staff was mocking Bill Clinton, who just was obsessed with Brexit. And he kept saying over and over, we're going to have a Brexit factor. And no one was taking him seriously. And this is the arrogance of her staffers, who frankly are responsible for the 1,100 seats lost in the Democratic Party and should be taken seriously because they're failing up and don't have any real skills. But let's put that aside. Bill Clinton, say what you will about him, he's incredibly intelligent.
Yeah.
And he might be disconnected from our base, but he was aware that there was something happening. And he kept mentioning Brexit, Brexit, Brexit. And so what you're seeing is this fascist rise, which is essentially the Marine Le Pen situation in France, which thank God is gone, you know, not ideal, but, you know, at least Marine Le Pen is gone. You know, Brexit and with it the left populist movement. So what I want to make really clear is that the alt-right, it is dangerous, and they are empowered and they feel enabled, and Donald Trump is literally their, you know, makes these extremists feel like they're controlling the world, which they are.
And one killed someone, Heather Heyer, who, when he mowed down protesters.
Exactly. Heather Heyer. And the alt-right is empowered, vocal, angry. There is a sharp increase. But let's not forget that Donald Trump played a divide-and-conquer politics game in the Republican Party. There were 17 people running for office. He did not win the majority of the Republican Party. That's one of the reasons why the Republican Party wanted to focus on their version of identity politics, because they wanted to appeal to Latinos, because they knew that their party was shrinking.
Right.
Now, on our side, you have the opposite. The minority in our party is the neoliberal centrists. We are growing I'm not even going to say the base of the Democratic Party, because it is the Democratic Party. When they say words like alt left, they want to make it sound like progressives are the minority.
Right.
When eight out of 10 Democrats identify as progressives, which is one more than last year, which was 7 out of 10. Wow, didn't know that. Uh-huh. And now Bernie Sanders has an approval rating of 80% in the Democratic Party.
They're trying to marginalize what you're saying is actually not marginal. And you're saying that unlike the alt-right, which is scary, which needs to be discussed, which needs to be responded to.
And growing.
And of course, the way to smash them is by these progressive policies, not by middle-of-the-road moderate stuff, which doesn't speak to them. But or it's not that we're converting them back. It's that we're preventing more people from going there. And that we have to have another discussion about. But that's how you smash their appeal, I think, and stop them from growing.
You smash their appeal by having solutions. And right now, the neoliberal strategy has really only provided – I mean, listen, Barack Obama – and I went on TV and I defended Barack Obama, President Obama, when we talked about the economy. I did this for 2-3 years. I said, the economy is doing better. I would go on Fox Business and Fox News and CNN, and I'd, you know, debate Republicans, and they'd be attacking the economy and how Barack Obama has raised taxes and blah, blah, blah. And I would say the economy is doing better than ever. But the real story was, no, Wall Street's doing better than ever. The economy, you know, is... You have to ask yourself, what economy are we talking about? Are we talking about Wall Street economy, which is a neoliberal 1% economy? Or are we talking about the middle class?
The middle class, okay.
Young people.
Uh-huh.
I mean, our poverty level is extraordinarily high. So I think we need to start calling the neoliberals out for what they are. They have a common goal with the Republicans and even the fascist Republicans. Their common goal is to keep the status quo 1%. This extreme capitalism, one side is blatantly racist and the other side codes its racism in woke capitalism. And I know that is incredibly controversial, but capitalism is based on imperialism, and imperialism is social design, which keeps people of color down. So next time somebody says to you that you're a Bernie bro and you're racist, you say, I'm sorry, where are the economic policies of extreme capitalism that are really helping out people of color and women of color?
Right.
Because by design, in our country, it was, you know, slavery was imperialism.
Because it's also a domestic thing.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
I mean, we have imperialism. You don't think that NAFTA is a form of imperialism?
Sure, right.
When we started bringing in slave labor.
You know, there's this ridiculous narrative that we see someone like Imani Gandhi having where she's like, I prioritize the uteruses of American women over refugees.
What?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a good, amazing quote. I prioritize my uteri and the uteri of women in this country over drones, and you will deal. She apologized. Nomi, do you know why she apologized? This is like the best alt-woke thing. I'm just calling it alt-woke.
I love that. Oh my God,
she
apologized. That's awesome.
Isn't that good? I started a hashtag for it. I'll send it to you. You got to spread it. She apologized for saying that because it should have said uteri of people in this country. I'm still working on being trans-inclusive. My apologies. Some of you self-styled commies need to look up the word prioritize. It doesn't mean I don't care about drone strikes, you ninnies. Christ. And it doesn't mean I'm pro-war imperialism. Are you all seriously this stupid? You can't be. I'm permitted to prioritize and focus my activism on my priorities, just as you are. So off with your self-righteous bullshit. And before the accusations of red baiting come flying in, my grandparents were actual communists. My grandpa lost his job as a teacher in the Philadelphia school district because he wouldn't name names. They were communist Jews. My mom grew up poor because of it. My grandpa's case went to the Supreme Court. That's how much he cared. Well, then you know what? Your grandfather would be mortified to see you compare. Like, who brought up drones versus uteri? As if there had been a proposal to, like, repatriate refugees into women's uteri or people's uteri.
Right, I was just going to say.
False dichotomy.
And that's actually a really good point because they pit these groups against
each
other.
And they say it's white privilege to care about drones. I wish I had the privilege of caring about drones, but as a black woman in America, I can't. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but I've seen stuff like that. And then they call people who are Middle Eastern or Arab American who are saying stuff about the Middle East or Arabs here or abroad, they are anti-black racists because they know they can't call them racists and they know they can't really push back on the idea that it's racist to drone people, so they just try to pretend that it's...
Well, and that's what they're trying to do. I mean, one thing I've noticed on this Unity Reform Commission, which, you know, is public, so it's not like I'm, you know, sharing any inner secrets of the Reform Commission, is that we have these conversations like, should we protect ethnics or should we protect the CBC? And it's like, we're all fighting for scraps.
Right.
When the DNC is literally lining the pockets, the majority of the budget, which is not transparent, but you can I sort of reverse engineered. I spent like, you know, a month doing it. And it's still not completely accurate because it's not transparent. So the majority of the money, the donor money, by the way, is going to like four consultants. So you see this ecosystem. This is literally based on greed. So these influencers, the Neera Tandons at Center for American Progress, are raising millions, $60, $70, $80 million. You know, you have Media Matters. They're empires. And they've built these political, professional political empires where they're buying off everybody from an all the way up to, you know, to an and they're doing it in the name of and congressmen and certain groups. And they're doing the name of, we will make sure that you get donors. We will make sure that you'll be taken care of. You will have a job with us. And some of them believe what they're selling, and some of them don't even. And what they do is they're saying, who is more important? The African-Americans who show up and vote and work for us every single time. I'm sorry, Black people are incredibly important to the Democratic Party, and no one's saying that they're not and they shouldn't be prioritized. So are Latinas and right. Latinos. So are women's rights.
Right.
And so, you know, and so are ethnic groups.
And they're
by the
pitting
way.
Them like, against each other. You're saying.
And they're pitting them against each other for a tiny bit of money. And the rest of it is going to these consultants.
Individuals. Now, what do you mean, who may be women and people of color, but certainly we're talking about a handful of people, right? We're not talking about the people,
yeah.
right? And this is what they do, what they're so good at. They take one person who's representative, then they say that we're, you know, who is, let's say, of color, a woman, then we're critical of that person because they are a person who has terrible politics or is doing terrible things, and then we are attacking them. Apparently.
It's mascot.
Yeah, it's totally mascotting. But wait, when you say they pit, you say, who do we help, the CBC, as in Congressional Black Caucus, or ethnics? What do they mean by ethnics? Non-Black ethnic people?
So, yeah, the Democratic Party used to invest in ethnic communities, which, by the way, like, that was the base, you know, in the early days.
What does that mean, ethnic communities?
Communities, so like, you know, for instance, I'm going to speak about Greeks in particular. Greeks used to be overwhelmingly Democratic. Hi, Michael Dukakis was our presidential yeah. nominee, right? Like, Greeks turned out...
As Jewy as you can get, but still...
So, I mean, yeah, because he married.
And he just, you know, standing in front of... it's adorable, standing in front of yeah. the tank with the little helmet. He just looks like a nice Jewish nebbish, yeah.
I'm sure Kitty would love that.
Yeah. Hi, Kitty. Hi, Kitty.
So, I mean, the Greeks used to turn out overwhelmingly for...
Yeah, Democrats, yeah.
For Democrats. My grandparents were Democrats. They were FDR Democrats. You know, they came to this country, they escaped fascism. And this last election, 7 out of 10 Greek Americans in America voted for Donald Trump.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's crazy.
And these are working people. These are
right.
working people.
Right.
So you go to places like Chicago, you go to places like Astoria, New York, Bay Ridge, Staten Island. This is where you find those ethnic communities, but we've ignored the community. Well, first thing, we've ignored the entire map. Like, let's
right.
just be real here.
Right.
We've ignored the entire map. So when you ignore the entire map and you're not out there investing in Democratic parties from Des Moines, Iowa, to Astoria, New York, to, you know, to Florida, to Texas, it doesn't matter. I mean, you go to Chicago, this old style machine politics used to have a function, as corrupt as it was.
Right.
It was at least being invested in.
Right, right,
and they
right.
took care of their people. Now it's like all they've learned from that is the machine side and not the taking care of your people side and paying attention to these communities.
Right.
So the money in the party, because it's not like we're not raising money. We've raised more money than we've ever raised. And they've tried to put up these articles like, we're not raising money. Well, there's a brand issue. But we've raised more money than ever, and it's being distributed sounds familiar, all the way to the top with all the consultants, and none of the state parties and local parties are getting it, so they can go out there and engage with communities and different communities. And they've depended on mass media, which is extremely expensive, where consultants make billions of dollars, instead of going out there and saying, we're going to organize, we're going to talk to people about issues and the issues that matter in their communities, because every community is different. It could be a different economic issue in Buffalo, New York, than there is in you know, Pittsburgh. So that's the issue. And Jim Zogby, who's been, you know, an executive board member of the DNC, he's great. He's great stories. He has been involved with the Ethnic Council of the DNC for 25 years. And so he could go into way more depth
about it. It's called the Ethnic Council?
Mm-hmm. We've seen this before. When you have vast income inequality, we're now at the worst point we've been since the Great Depression. When you see vast income inequality, even on a global level, you see a rise of extreme fascist tendencies. With that, you know, it's guised in populism. There is a populist uprising in this country and globally, especially in areas where this neoliberal politics has, you know, you're not seeing populist uprisings in Indonesia. You're not seeing populist uprisings in especially in Southeast Asia, but you're seeing it in countries where neoliberal policies have been reigning for the past 30 years. And that's mostly because the 1% has become incredibly, incredibly wealthy. You know, the average CEO's salary has gone up 300 times in the past 10 years, what it was 10 years ago. That's outrageous, you know? So when you see things like that and you hear things like that and people are hurting and they can't support themselves and they can't pay for health insurance, they can't, you know, when they get in a car accident, they go bankrupt for the rest of their lives, they lose their homes, they can't pay for their kids' schools, they don't have their retirement, forget vacation, you know, forget about cost of living, they have to move from their communities because they can't afford to live in them anymore. You know, these are the issues that people are facing today. And so when you see CEO's salary go up that much and you're dealing with this, Neera Tanden saying that, you know, that single payer is not a smart strategy while she's literally accepting money from some of the biggest billionaires in the world, you know, people aren't dumb. They have Google. They can figure things out. So they can try to divide the left all they want, but the majority of Democrats, majority of Americans want better lives. They want single payer. They want Medicare for all. And it is a threat to their business model. But in the end, you know, those who have more in common are quite frankly, those who are defending the 1%. And all you have to do is say, who's defending the 1% right now?
Right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And there's a reason that these people are comparing the left to, as you said, the alt-right, to marginalize the very people and movements that will weaken the alt-right, quote-unquote alt-left, which is a term, a smear, championed by people who like to call everyone on the real left, alt-left, and Bernie bros. And they now have it on their conscience.
Yep.
These people who always compare us to being similar to Trump or enabling Trump or overlapping with him.
Yep.
These people have a shared talking point with Donald Trump.
Yep.
And you and I know that they've emboldened him much more than any of us could ever do.
Absolutely.
Because of what you explained. But now we have the actual talking point. And let's be honest. If he used one of our talking points, they would be out for blood. The neoliberals
Without
who
a
use
doubt.
The word the alt-left. So we have to start
Without
calling them the alt-woke.
The alt-woke, and we should, quite frankly, be focusing on the issues. Because the more we focus on issues, they can't steal our narrative.
Thank you so much, Nomiki Khan. You know what, Gabe? Daily News has a nice roundup of some of the things that she blames. We don't honestly have time to go through the 17,000 things. The Daily News whittled it down to 18 things. But let's just pick some of our favorites. Ready? Here's
that,
one of
that
them.
Is a, that's a brutal listicle. 18? All right, let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. Ready? Bernie Sanders. And she accuses him of attacks that, quote, cause lasting damage.
Yes.
She says that he had to, quote, had to resort to innuendo and impugning my character.
Ooh, he resorted to innuendo?
Yep. And it was beyond frustrating that Bernie acted as if he had a monopoly on political purity. Okay, dude, he never said that. That's a talking point. Stop it.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know what this purity thing is.
It's basically a way for people to pretend that having political convictions and ideals and not wanting to send back little children to Honduras makes you a purist. Of course, what does she blame? Bernie Bros for harassing my supporters online with attacks that were ugly and more than a little sexist. Guess who else? Green Party candidate Jill Stein, who, quote unquote, wouldn't be worth mentioning if she hadn't helped. I know, right? And of course, she wouldn't be worth mentioning, except that there were, quote, more than enough Stein voters to swing the result, just like Ralph Nader did in Florida and New Hampshire. So, blaming Jill Stein. Okay, let's see. What else? Sexism and misogyny, obviously. Flagrantly sexist candidate. Yes, which she's talking about Trump.
Jill
Trump,
Stein?
Donald Trump.
Oh, got it.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, that was number four. It's really hard to keep track, guys. Sorry about that. Number five, Russian President Vladimir Putin and Russian hackers for working to, quote unquote, influence our election and install a friendly puppet, end quote. Ooh, ready for this? Former President Barack Obama.
Wow, Barry?
Yeah, Barry O, because he didn't give a national television address about the Russian hacking. And had he done that, she says, quote unquote, more Americans would have woken up.
Right.
Also, apparently he told her to go easy on Bernie Sanders. And that made her feel like she was, quote, in a straitjacket, end quote. I wish she had been in a straitjacket. Her basket of deplorable statement. That's the closest, that's something she actually did herself. That's pretty good. Anthony Weiner, her using a private email service, server.
I forgot about Anthony Weiner.
The New York Times for the effect, for the reporting on her emails. Okay, here's this is good. Ready? I have come to terms with the fact that a lot of people, millions and millions of people, decided they just didn't like me. What makes me such a lightning rod for fury? I'm really asking. I'm at a loss. Well, you know, we could do a whole episode on this, actually. Anyway, well, Gabe, you know what I'm really excited about is I'm really excited to see people. You know where we're going to see them. We're going to see you guys Monday, September 18th, at our live taping. So exciting, because we got Jabari Brisport live in the flesh.
Why is it important that we have this guy on the show?
Because he's running for city council, 35th district. Because he is an open socialist, because he's been endorsed by the Democratic Socialists of America, because he's been endorsed by the Black Lives Matter caucus, because he embraces really great policies, because he wants to shut down Rikers and he's not waiting, because he wants to do good things for the environment, because he's just a great guy, handsome guy, and he's a vegan, but don't hold that against him. And he's running on the Green Party ticket.
That's great.
So come out September 18th, Monday, you guys, it's a Monday. Monday, September 18th, 7 p.m., a free show at the Brooklyn Commons, which is 388 Atlantic Avenue, and then we'll be doing karaoke. Gabe, what are you going to sing? You got any songs on your playlist that you're thinking about? Pony, we got to sing Pony.
I think we're going to do a Pony duet.
A Pony duet. Let's also, we should do a Hillary theme, actually. We could do Pony, we could do Blame It on the Alcohol, what else? Blame It on the Rain.
Milli Vanilli?
Yeah.
Yep, my favorite. We'll both be wearing bicycle shorts.
We should do the whole show as if we were Milli Vanilli. Thanks so much. And follow me on Twitter at KT Helps. That's letter K, letter T, H-A-L-P-S. And Gabe?
At Gabe, G-A-B-E underscore P-A-C-H-E-C-O.
Pacheco. Gabe underscore Pacheco. Rate and review us on iTunes, guys. Just do it. Just give us that love. Thomas Frank is a political analyst and historian whose books include What's the Matter with Kansas? And Listen Liberal, or Whatever Happened to the Party of the People. You can learn more about Thomas and follow his work at tcfrank.com. T as in Thomas, C as in Charles, frank.com. And you can find his latest piece at The Guardian, which is called Hillary Clinton's Book Has a Clear Message, Don't Blame Me. Nomiki Kunst is an investigative journalist at the Young Turks and a Sanders appointee to the Democratic Unity Reform Commission. You can find her on Twitter at Nomiki Kunst. That's N-O-M-I-K-I-K-O-N-S-T. If you like the Katie Helper Show, please consider becoming Patreon supporters for extra bonus content. And you'll hear the rest of our interview with Thomas Frank. That's patreon.com/thekatiehelpershow. Again, patreon.com/thekatiehelpershow.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.